I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Senator Jeff Flake, Republican from Arizona, is no fan of President Trump. He says he didn't vote for him last November and said why in his book, Conscience of a Conservative. Flake took to the Senate floor on Tuesday to deliver a harsh critique of the president and his fellow Republicans for what he called their complicity and silence about Trump's behavior.
Reckless, outrageous, and undignified behavior has become excused and countenanced as telling it like it is, when it is actually just reckless, outrageous, and undignified. And when such behavior emanates from the top of our government, it is something else. It is dangerous to a democracy.
Flake faced an uphill battle for re-election and announced his retirement on Tuesday at the end of his term in 2018. Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, who did vote for Trump and was even considered for a cabinet position, has been withering in his criticisms of President Trump this week.
Look, I think the standing up in front of the American people and stating untruth that everybody knows to be untrue, just the attempted bullying that he does, which everybody sees through, just the dividing of our country, the, you know, the name calling, just, you know, for young people to be watching, not only here in our country, but around the world, someone of this mentality or as President of the United States is something that is, I think, debasing to our country.
Trump tweeted that, quote, little Bob Corker was clueless and could not get elected dog catcher. Corker is also leaving Congress, as are other Republican representatives, including moderate Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania. So what is happening inside the GOP? Is the party of Lincoln now the party of Trump? We have three guests who have joined us. John Fetterman is mayor of Braddock, Pennsylvania, one-time Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate. John Fetterman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us is Domenico Montanaro, lead editor for politics and digital audience at NPR. Domenico Montanaro, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi there, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Joe Watkins. He's a political commentator for MSNBC, and he served in the Bush 1 White House. Joe Watkins, nice to have you with us.
Great
as
to be
well.
With you, Marty.
Once again. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes at whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Joe, let me begin with you. You're a Republican. Do you see Flake's speech as going down in history?
It's a very, very strong speech, and I think Senator Flake spoke from his heart, which it would be great to hear all senators do. But unfortunately, too often self-service gets in the way of public service, and people, because they want to be reelected and they need to be reelected, they don't wish to offend their constituents, say what they think their constituents want to hear as opposed to what they know they need to hear and what is the truth. And now Senator Flake and Senator Corker and Senator McCain and some others have been freed of the need to try to placate their constituents and to say what they think is true, given their experience.
Does he speak for you?
I would say this. I would say that what there's a difference between what works and what's right. Clearly, what President Trump has been able to do in terms of winning a national election, he bested, 16 or 17 other candidates, some incredibly well-qualified candidates. And and he's managed, despite it all, to at least maintain some momentum. He's not been able to get any legislation passed, but he's maintained some momentum. He's likely not to endure heavy losses in the center of the House in the 2018 midterms just because of the makeup of the Senate races. You know, there are going to be 34 reelection races, 25 Democrat, something like 9 Republican. So he's not likely to suffer heavy losses, but what he's doing may not be the best thing for the country. And just what works may not be what's right. I mean, I think what's best for the country is to be honest, to be truthful, to not beat up people who can't defend themselves or people who you don't happen to like. I think courtesy and kindness are good things. I think it's great when people are kind and thoughtful and considerate of each other. And we haven't seen that practiced in the last several months in the White House. I'm somebody who worked for a president who was that way.
No, I understand.
I mean, George H.W. Bush was a very, whether you liked his politics or not, certainly, personally, he was very considerate. He never belittled anybody.
Let me get to Domenico and John in on the conversation. To you, Domenico, as someone who covers in many ways what's happening in Washington, in Congress, Did Flake and even Corker, are they saying out loud what other Republicans are saying quietly and privately?
I think there are certainly plenty of Republicans who are saying what they're saying publicly now, but they're saying these things privately, these other Republicans. And I think Joe's absolutely right that, you know, it's about what works. And I think what that underlying message is that right now the Republican Party is Trump's party because it makes it very difficult. I mean, somebody like Jeff Flake, it's not like he's sticking around and making this message and saying, I'm going to fight and I've got the backing of my Arizona constituency. His approval rating has dropped. He's facing a difficult primary. He's got people like Steve Bannon, the former chief strategist in the White House, targeting him. President Trump also putting a lot of pressure on him. Bob Corker, you saw him decide he's not running for re-election. So it's not like these guys are doing this and saying, I'm going to run and I'm going to win and I'm going to show you that, you know, a different kind of non-Trump Republican can win. They're actually kind of making a concession that maybe they can't and maybe it's too difficult and that the party has changed. I think that what you've seen here is really over the last year and a half, 2 years, both parties suffer a bit of a crack up. You're seeing at least four different political strains. You've got a populist left led by Bernie Sanders, a populist right, which is kind of Trump's America, and this center right, center left non-coalition, but the former pragmatic left of center, left of right, kind of Obama-Clinton Democrats and George H.W. Bush, George Bush, John McCain, Bob Corker, Jeff Flake, establishment Republicans who are probably the most feeling like they're in the wilderness because right now the left at least is united in opposition to Trump.
Well, let me get you in on the conversation there, John Fetterman. As a one-time Democratic candidate for the U.S. Mm-hmm. Senate and also very outspoken during the Democratic primary, how do you see then what's going on inside the Democratic Party? Is there a parallel, I'm not going to say civil war, but a parallel argument?
Well, they're both incredibly thoughtful comments made by my friends here, and I don't disagree with much of what's said. I guess, but as far as Jeff Flake goes, it's easy to go Bullworth when you're not sticking around, and the real trick is actually accomplishing something while you're running on your principles and putting yourself out there. So I'm much more of a cynic. It seemed like Jeff Flake was just auditioning for a gig at MSNBC and
to be on with Joe, right?
Yeah, the kind, smiling Republican that liberals can want to have a beer with. Respect to my own party, I see it as more towards kind of slouching towards a civil war because you will have this ongoing Clinton Sanders proxy war going on, and I look at my own Twitter feed and it's 50-50 roughly, and there's quite a bit of bitterness and invective going back and forth, and to me that's, we're united against Trump, but we're also fractured as a party because along those lines, and with Senator Sanders all but running for president in 2020, it's going to create a significant dynamic because you're of course have a Clinton-esque standard bearer as well emerge from our party as well, whether it's Kamala Harris or someone else. You will have that kind of almost a repeat, I think, of 2016.
John, picking up what you just said there, and Bernie Sanders has been very public. He's gone on CNN a couple of times to debate some of his counterparts on some issues. Do you see that as laying the groundwork for presidential
run? He's doing everything that anyone is running for president would do, and someone who's run for president before you know, visiting all the states, high visibility. I mean, like, how can you become more popular than use Ted Cruz as a punching bag on national television in Democratic circles? So, I mean, without a doubt, it would be, you know, startling if he isn't running for president, as far as I'm concerned. To me, the real mystery is, I think we're going to have a clown car in the Democratic side that will dwarf the Republican one in 2016. And there'll be another candidate emerge that will kind of fall under the left of center, the more pragmatic slash, you know, Clinton-esque candidate in 2020 in the Democrat side.
And you're talking, I think, about 2018 next year. That's John Fetterman. He's the mayor of Braddock, Pennsylvania. He ran for the U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania as a Democratic candidate. Domenico Montanaro with us as well, lead editor for politics and the digital audience for NPR. He's joining us from his, I guess, your NPR studio in your own house. And Joe Watkins is with us. I'm jealous here in our studio. Political commentator for MSNBC, served in the Bush 1 White House. We're talking about the two parties. One question is the party of Lincoln now the party of Trump? And also, if there's a similar revolution or civil war argument happening among the Democrats. And again, you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Joe, let me go back to you, picking up on what both Domenico and John were talking about earlier. Do you feel abandoned by your party? Do you feel like you're part of that middle that either is leaving or people are not interested in what you have to say?
Well, I think people have to be smart and creative and think about what they can do to change the dialogue, or at least to make it better. You know, it's not enough to sit back and just take it on the chin and say, boy, the party is falling apart and I don't like the people that are leading it. Then provide new leadership, I think, is what you do. And I think it's important for people to not just be in the Bullworth sense to speak up as they're leaving, but because I think John makes a great point. But to speak up while they're there. You know, I've talked about the need for term limits forever and ever, saying that this is one of the reasons why you have the gridlock in D.C. and the self-service that we see among politicians, which is they just want to get reelected for another term. So rather than providing leadership, more often than not, they take the temperature of the constituency so they can get reelected. And at the end of the day, we don't move forward as a country, certainly district by district, state by state, city by city. We don't move forward unless people stand up and actually lead us and do what's right as opposed to what's expedient.
Let me turn to you, Domenico, and helping us understand within the Republican Party whether the argument, whether it's public or private, is with the president's policies, knowing, of course, that he does often shift policies, or is it about character? Is it about more recently having an argument with a widow about what he did or didn't say to her versus apologizing if she misunderstood what he had to say? Is it about Trump himself or something about what he represents?
Well, I think that there's two pieces of that. I mean, there is some level of policy. I mean, I think that the populist right and populist left certainly seem to kind of intersect in certain ways when it comes to protectionist foreign policy, whether it's intervention or if it's being involved in global markets. Certainly the Bernie Sanders left and the Trump right are much more in favor of kind of taking care of problems at home and not being involved in either conflicts or markets abroad, feeling like that trade has been a negative for the country. And you have a very different sort of set of people on that pragmatic left and pragmatic right who don't believe that, who believe that the world is flat and that you have to continue in that and that the United States needs to be in that space. And that's something that you know, has been clear. I mean, I never thought that I would be at a Democratic convention and have anybody care about TPP, you know, and have it be no TPP signs.
Yes,
you know, I mean,
exactly.
This was a very strange thing for that to be the talking point. And you had, you know, Donald Trump in his kind of odd victory speech the one night where he said, no TPP, you mean no PP, because somebody said it in the crowd and it would made a joke out of it. So, yes, there's some policy, but there's also a lot of character. You know, I think when Joe talks about courtesy and kindness, I think that there is a section of the Republican Party, not an insignificant number of people, who are frustrated with the politics, frustrated with demographic change. They're frustrated with what they see as Republicans, what they think are losing their way, or the country, certain people in rural America feeling like they're left behind and forgotten, and that people in cities are the ones that get all the attention and that they're talked down to. And they're angry about that. And Trump said during the campaign, he's proud to carry the mantle of anger. And, you know, there's a degree of brashness that they want displayed. And when people like Flake and Corker leave, there's a large section of people who cover politics for a long time who think that maybe they're not the swamp, but to Trump supporters, they are the swamp and they're draining it.
John Fetterman, you live in I guess what we could call rural Pennsylvania, certainly rural America. How do you see it?
Well, I'm urban. I actually live across the street from a steel mill. Industrial and Western Pennsylvania was pivotal in Donald Trump's election. So I think what's less remarkable about Democrats caring about TPP was that Donald Trump single-handedly altered what was the party of free trade at all cost to, you know, anti-trade. Like, Donald Trump is the one that killed TPP, and that was a remarkable pivot. You know, Pat Toomey in my race was his entire career Mr. Free Trade, and he flip-flopped on supporting TPP because he was so afraid of that kind of populist backlash. So to me, the most transformative thing with respect to which party on trade has occurred in the Republican Party. And that being said, you go outside of my community into 5 minutes outside, and it was a sea of Trump signs, you know, in 2016. So he definitely touched a nerve. And that anger of feeling left behind, that anger of seeing their way of life and their communities kind of deteriorating over the last several decades, he really plugged into that. And I couldn't agree more with Joe. We do need more civility. We do need more kindness. But that's not how Donald Trump won. Donald Trump continues to be rewarded for exercising the exact opposite of that kind of behavior. In just about every way, he is far more severe than I would have anticipated him being, you know, after he was elected, in terms of like tweeting, you know, at TV show hosts, you know, making fun of them for their ratings. I mean, this is a lead over the free world here. And he has so altered the presidential DNA of the office going forward that, you know, we're really flying blind in new territory as to what lasting impact, whether he wins re-election or not, that Donald Trump will have on America's body politic.
I do want to pick up on that. Let me read a couple of tweets and comments here, and then we will take a short break and get back to our conversation. An email: how do Republicans get 63 million people to vote against their own best interests? A tweet: Sanders is beloved across the country, including by 92% of Democratic voters. Only opposition comes from corporate Democrats. An email from Gary: as a formerly registered Republican for many years, I left the party because of Donald Trump. I'm now an independent. Wake up, GOP. This is not the party of Ronald Reagan anymore. For shame. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation with John Fetterman, Domenico Montanaro, and Joe Watkins. And you can join our conversation. Yes, you can send us comments at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Let me play Senator John McCain. He accepted the 2017 Liberty Medal at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia very recently. Here's just a portion of what he said.
To fear the world we have organized and led the three quarters of a century, to abandon the ideals we have advanced around the globe, to refuse the obligations of international leadership and our duty to remain the last best hope of Earth for the sake of some half-baked, spurious nationalism cooked up by people who would rather find scapegoats and solve problems. is as unpatriotic as an attachment to any other tired dogma of the past that Americans consigned to the ash heap of history.
And again, talking with John Fetterman, he's mayor of Braddock, Pennsylvania, a Democrat. Also, Joe Watkins, a Republican, served in the Bush 1 White House, a political commentator for MSNBC, and Domenico Montanaro, lead editor for politics and digital audience at NPR. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Joe, I mean, it seems like every president tries to remake the country and the party to some degree in their own image. Do you see the party of Lincoln, your party, becoming the party of Trump? And I'm thinking about Bannon, and I'm thinking about people leaving. I'm thinking about some of the candidates, Roy Moore, for instance, in Alabama, some others who have pretty extreme views getting elected.
Yeah. Well, it's we are faced with what we face, and we're here now. I mean, there were people who would have told all of us that there was no way that Donald Trump could be elected in early 2016. I remember doing an interview on MSNBC in 2015 in the summer, and one of my friends who's an anchor said to me, and I was on the panel, said, you know, Joe, how much longer do you think the Trump thing lasts? I mean, you know, when does he drop out? And I said, you know what? I said, he's got legs. And I said, he very well may win Iowa, and he's likely to win New Hampshire, which means that he's very serious because the Republican winner of New Hampshire has won the nomination for some years now.
Yeah.
And so we have to deal with what's here. It doesn't mean that Republicans of good conscience can't step up and speak up and say what this party really needs to be. I mean, there are a lot of Americans who want to see better, who don't like the incivility, who don't like the tone, belittling folks, the constant fighting. That's worked for Donald Trump, by the way. I mean, in his business career, that kind of tumult has worked for him, and it's worked for him politically as well. He's been very successful when he belittles somebody or gives them a title, you know, Little Bob Corker or whatever he calls you. That's very effective, by the way, but it's not necessarily a good thing for the country, I don't think. I don't think it's good for politics. I don't think it's good for the country. I don't think it's a good example for our young people who might wish to make a contribution one day in politics. And we've got to look to that. We've got to look to the future and how do we make it better.
Well, Domenico, I'm thinking as much as the Republicans obviously control the White House and Congress as well, they haven't put, to use a cliche, many points on the board. And at some point, and picking up on what John Fetterman was saying, you know, at some point they're going to wonder if the swamp has been drained or not.
Well, certainly. I mean, I think that there's a big problem when you're not putting points on the board, as you note. But, you know, I think that the thing here is that I think a lot of Trump supporters have a lot of patience with Donald Trump. There's been very little decline in his popularity among those supporters. That's why you're seeing his approval rating essentially stay where it is. You know, President Obama pretty much had a floor for his approval rating that was around 41-42%. You didn't really see it ever drop much below that, if ever. President Trump seems to have a floor that's around the, you know, mid to low 30s max. You know, he's at that 35-36%, sometimes a little higher than that. And I think that that's obviously because of the supporters on his side who just believe what he wants to do, and whether they actually get anything done. Certainly, it's going to be a question, and we have to continue to ask questions of his supporters on whether or not they think he's actually getting done what he had promised. But he's got a long, long leash to be able to blame everyone else in Congress, mm-hmm. President Obama, and Mitch McConnell.
To you, John, and thinking about the Democrats who not just opposed the president, but are just almost apoplectic about the president, how do you suggest they deal with him?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's no real way to there's no where you can turn for guidance or historical precedent. You know, on a near daily basis, Donald Trump commits an act or a tweet or a statement that would, you know, severely damage, if not outright end, most presidencies. And it's just like a matter of course, you know, like arguing with the widow of a fallen American soldier. I mean,
yeah,
that's
shocking.
Like, I mean, I remember when Al Gore sighed too loud at the debate with the second George Bush, and it was like, oh my gosh, that's over for Al. You know, like You know, no one wants to have a beer with him. And it's like, this man tweets insults. This man calls widows liar. I mean, so it's like, you know, how do you deal with that? Is, you know, like, I'm not really sure, because the Republicans, and to me, the most fascinating development isn't what Jeff Flake or is saying. It's Roy Moore. You know, like, Roy Moore is a creature grown in the Trumpian kind of vein, but he got out of the lab and is scaring them now. I mean, down in Alabama, you know, their candidate, you know, lost pretty handily down in Alabama. And Roy Moore, you know, this is a man who brandished a gun during a campaign event. And he won an election in defiance of, you know, somebody like Trump, who is so already like kind of beyond the pale of extremes. So, you know, from a Republican standpoint, they have to hold on for dear life, anyone who craves that kindness and civility that I think is missing. But we're not done in terms of seeing how much that's going to transform and how Democrats interface with that. You know, we just, again, have to hold the line, because eventually, you know, all that will have to come crashing down, because it just can't continue on as like it is.
Ooh, I'm sure all three of you want, or all of you want to respond to that. Let me just read. Trump just tweeted, "Do not underestimate unity within the Republican Party." Let me get Carl from Bucks County to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Carl. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I think what three gentlemen here don't understand, they're talking in esoteric terms, is the average person today, when they go out for a job, it's $8 an hour job. And the trouble is, that anger you're speaking of is not to subside until there's more jobs coming back to the U.S. That's what Trump rode the wave on. And despite his nuttiness, which we'll all agree is there, he's riding a wave of discontent, of economic despair. No matter what the press says, the economy has not improved. People have trouble getting jobs. They have to have two or three jobs to survive. That is not normal middle-class living.
Fair.
So that was my...
I'm glad you called, Carl, because you raised some important points, and I see Joe Watkins nodding his head.
Yeah,
actually,
Carl is making a really excellent point, because I do study the economic indicators, and Carl is right. I mean, the rate of unemployment doesn't tell the whole picture, because many people say, well, the rate of unemployment, it's an all, you know, at a, you know, a relatively low number. But the reality is that if you look at the number of Americans who are working part-time for economic reasons, you know, there's 6 million who are doing that, what we call the U6 number. If you look at the labor force participation rate, which is still hovering around 62 or 63%, which means that 37, 38% of people who can work are not working. If you look at the number of people who don't have benefits, and they're considered working, but like I said, they're working part-time for economic reasons because, as Carl said, they can't find a good full-time job that pays them what they used to make. Yeah, all those people are very, very angry. And on the right, for the most part, they voted for Donald Trump. On the on the left, they voted for Bernie Sanders. I mean, they you know, they both captured that anger of Americans.
Well, and Domenico,
here's the thing.
Yeah,
if I could jump in,
yeah,
for a second.
And I'm thinking, you know, of the tax plan. But go ahead. No, go ahead, Domenico.
No, I mean, you know, and Joe, as somebody who pays attention to this stuff, and you know, the economy has improved. I mean, undeniably, it's improved, but not for everyone. You know, the wage gap has still increased. It hasn't. Wages haven't increased in the way it has from other recoveries. But I think that this decline was worse than we've seen for anything that since the Great Depression. You know, there's obviously frustration. There's people left in the gaps, and that is what Trump and Sanders were able to capitalize on. I think the forest for the trees that's missing with some of the folks who may have voted for Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump is that their solutions are ones that analysts say really wouldn't make a whole lot of difference, and that the economy has fundamentally changed and shifted. And there's no good solutions or easy solutions for being able to restore the middle class in a way when factory jobs were available. But you see, when people have college degrees and are able to get graduate degrees, their lives have been greatly improved and been able to, you know, the economy's kept up with them. The economy hasn't kept up with people who don't have college degrees. That, understandably, there's frustration there, but the solutions that are put forth by that are simple solutions from Donald Trump, you know, a lot of analysts point to that and say those just aren't going to help.
And whether you're talking about the whatever changes made to the Affordable Care Act or even this tax plan that's under consideration, I mean, John Fetterman, that was really the heart of your campaign about the people who have been left behind.
Sure, and that's true. And you know, if you pay somebody $9 an hour, we know one thing, and that is they will not be able to take care of themselves and certainly not their family. And when that occurs, then you're going to rely on all kinds of governmental assistance. You're going to have a lot of statistically negative outcomes from a societal standpoint. So to the earlier point that folks with college degrees or advanced degrees are doing much better. If you're going to outsource middle class sustaining manufacturing jobs, you also can't allow people to work for $7.35 an hour either on the backside, and that fracture and what occurred there, I think, has really created this enormously wide gulf of inequality and despair. And my community is part of a valley, the Mon Valley, out here in southwestern Pennsylvania, where you can really see that firsthand and what that has done to communities. And once prosperous, wealthy communities, and from an economic standpoint, are now some of the poorest, anywhere.
Yeah.
So there's that anxiety and that angst, but there are policies. But first of all, paying people a living wage, universal health care, these kind of things can increase the quality of life and reduce the inequality. You're never going to have comparable pay for somebody with two advanced graduate degrees versus someone with a high school diploma. But we should not have those people with, say, a high school diploma, as a society, sanctioning him or her working for $8.50 an hour trying to support a family.
Indeed. Thanks for the call. We've got Adrian now. Adrian calling us from Elkins Park. Adrian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I've been watching the debate at length, and my biggest concern is that we talk a lot about the problems, but we don't seem to be working as a country towards solving them. The Republicans have a very fixed agenda, which is basically trickle-down economics, which, in my own opinion and from what I've read, has obviously been proven to work, and yet for some reason we still keep beating the same drum. And the Democrats have a very socialist agenda, but none of them seem to be focusing on actually working together to find a plan that works for the long term of the U.S. with the advancement of technology, computers, and all of the things that are likely to impact well-educated people. How do we get around that problem when we have districts in the country that continue to reduce taxation in order to cut education spending so people can't get the training they need? And to me, the dysfunction in Washington stems directly from this lack of cohesiveness and this inability to formulate a national policy for how we get
for
out
the
of
future. Adrian, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Joe, do you agree with that?
Well, I think that Republicans and Democrats need to work together. I do agree with him that nothing is getting done. I mean, we aren't moving the ball forward. I mean, people are too satisfied with fighting and winning their argument, but you haven't seen any progress. I pastor a church in one of the most economically distressed sections of Philadelphia, and we've been through now, since I've been there, several different administrations, Republican, Democrat, and for the poorest people, it hasn't changed. I mean, they're still poor. They still don't have anything.
It's getting worse,
John.
If anything. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine.
The opioid crisis is dumping gasoline on that fire that's been burning.
Yeah.
And, just yesterday in the Pittsburgh area, we had a little one-year-old baby die because she ingested elephant tranquilizer.
Goodness.
I mean, it's like you want to talk about the wheels coming off. You have this economic despair that have mired a lot of communities, dump the opioid crisis on, and you have whole sections that it's like, it should be the national emergency as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And we're almost out of time here. Domenico, anything you want to add? And let me just read a couple of comments. One from Steve from Newtown. He says it's all about the continuous lying. A tweet from Royce: today's political climate seems to be a system of mutually assured polarization. A comment from Michael: ask why the GOP seems to spend a lot of its energy screwing the consumer. Tweet from Jeff: crucified, you still have all of your rights. rights, freedoms, and privilege. What have you suffered is crucified, a meaningless word right now. People are upset, Domenico. Any final 30 seconds of
commentary? Well, I just think that President Trump, you know, isn't quite sure how he wants to legislate just yet. You know, he keeps vacillating between whether or not he wants to work with Democrats or whether or not he wants to go with a straight Republican solution. And he, you know, seems to have this idea that any solution or anything that passes is a win. But his people, and you heard that from the one caller who called in, you know, want fixes, especially economic ones. So why wasn't infrastructure the first thing that was done? Or if you're going to work on healthcare, why don't you find fixes to the Affordable Care Act rather than, you know, ripping it up to say, you know, you're not going to make CSR payments, these subsidy payments that will inevitably hurt people because they won't be able to make their premium payments. I think President Trump needs to figure out how he's going to want to legislate going forward in a more consistent way.
We in this country have lost sight of the difference between politics and governance. And now everything's about politics and no one wants to govern and no one wants to get involved on the policy side.
It's
becoming professional wrestling.
I hate to end our conversation. John Fetterman, thank you for joining us. Domenico Montanaro, thank you for joining us. And Joe Watkins, thank you for joining us as well. We need a 2-hour show. I'm Artie Moskowain. Thanks for joining us.